Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday, the 18th of January. Very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel. A quick reminder before we do that you can certainly join in on the conversation. We love your letters, roundtable, or for the most part.
Yeah.
Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We would love to hear from you this morning, and we'll be talking about stuff. Let me introduce our panel. Teresa Bourgeois is here, communications consultant. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
What a beautiful day.
Yeah. It was a pretty day to drive in.
Oh,
yeah, sun's out.
Sun's out.
Life snow.
Is good.
It's very beautiful. Well, I don't know about the life is good part, but it's lovely. We'll see. We're going to talk about some of what's going on in life.
Just keep saying
that's
it.
True.
It'll become true.
and our little ray of sunshine, Ira Fussfeld is here from the made his way up.
Yeah, it wasn't
the,
such
Kingston
a great
area.
Day driving up in Kingston, the little roads in Woodstock, and but
oh,
I'm here.
Oh my goodness, you're a curmudgeon.
Oh, more than that.
It was beautiful, wasn't it?
Oh, more than that.
Well, I'm so pleased
you're
to hear
not
we're
a curmudgeon. I'm kidding.
Well, I'm pleased to hear we're talking about stuff. I'm an expert in stuff.
And stuff, yeah. Yes. He is Daily Freeman, publisher emeritus, and we're thrilled to have Ira Fussfeld with us today. Dr. Alan Chartok is here. He's checking his list it twice, making sure who's
hi Joe, hi gang,
hi everybody.
I'm sitting here on what we say it's the Yiddish word of the day, shpilkes. It means pins and needles, worrying about
Ira. I gotta count on you for
that's fairly close in. Although I'm not an expert, but that one I know.
Yeah, sitting on pins and needles, hoping that we can get to $1 million today in the lockbox. It would be terrific. We're getting very close. And think about all those great people who put $1 million in there already. And now by February 5th, we need that extra $500,000. It would be great if somebody would make a major challenge to say, if we can do this, I'll give this much money. But so far, it's up to just us, all of us, to say, let's get that extra $500,000 in there, and then we'll have a regular fund drive, and we won't miss a day of this incredibly important news. So from my heart to yours, I'm just imploring you, if you haven't done something already, to get there at WAMC.org.
WAMC.org. By the way, tomorrow is our big event, live event over at the Linda. We have a handful of tickets left. When I say handful, it's under 20, I think. But we have a couple left. If you want to come and join us, we'd love for you to be there. It's a $100 donation. All of the panel all-stars will be there, and we're very, very excited.
All of them.
No, all right. Ira didn't get an invitation. Well, I apologize, Ira. Most of the people, there are people who are not going to be here, and that was because they either could not make it, or we needed them other days this week.
Yeah. No, I'm just being curmudgeonly.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
You're a sweet curmudgeon.
Yeah.
The sweetest curmudgeon.
Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, let me just say that your estimate of 20 is wrong. I just heard two people on the phones outside taking orders, so...
All right.
So I'm 18. Telling you now, if you don't do it at this moment, you are, in the president's word, S out of luck.
That's right. You're S out of luck. Now, I got to tell you, I know some people were worried about weather. It's supposed to be a very nice morning tomorrow. You shouldn't have any trouble getting in. The lot will be plowed. It'll be ready. There'll be parking. Everything's set. We're ready. We got breakfast. All's going to be great. So we're going to be talking about the 1 year of the Trump administration. Here's an idea. We have a lot to talk about, and we have a great panel. We're very excited, and we hope that you can join us. All right. Now,
what we're talking about. We're talking about the first year of Trump.
Tweet me some quotes.
That's something you'll all want to be there for, because I'm sure you all have some ideas.
I've been working on the sort of a vague outline, and I've been going over some talking points that I want to hit on for the show tomorrow, and I expect to get to two of them. But it's you at least try, right?
So, how about 2,000 lies, according to the Washington
but
Post?
But it is going over the past year and reading it and just seeing in a chronology is just breathtaking.
Yeah. I was going to, alluding to what you just said, I was going to recommend you come dressed with like a top hat and a ringmaster's thing.
So. Right. You never know. I've been hearing from a fellow virtually every day who thinks I'm way to the left. and said, "It's and bawled Joe out and said, why are you having Alan Dershowitz on every day? So I wrote back to him and I said, Dershowitz? And he said, what? He writes back and says, whatever. My wife insists on giving you money. Your wife is a good person.
And we wouldn't invite Dershowitz.
He's a hard one to nail down. Now we don't know which side.
I've actually interviewed Dershowitz, on our air. He is not always my cup of tea, but I have certainly heard him. And,
oh no, he's been on. Yeah, we've had him on the show. He's just not very pleasant.
Well,
but it's hard to know where he's coming from.
Is that a surprise?
No,
is that a surprise?
No, it's not a surprise.
Well, okay.
I just call Ira curmudgeon.
I'm not insulted by that at all.
Thank gosh.
Alan would have called me
an
overweight curmudgeon.
I want a mulligan on that one. Oh,
come
no.
on. I would never say you were overweight. I would say that your thoughts are heavy.
Yes.
Speaking of a curmudgeon, some tweeting went on this morning.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Is Kelly going to lose his job?
Okay. So, well, let's talk about that. That's the first story. That's
Kelly
the 4A story up for bids. Well, he's dead. So let's. this is the one who's alive.
At the present time.
Who's dead? Gene Kelly.
Oh, yeah, Gene Kelly.
Okay.
I loved him.
President Trump's chief of staff privately told a group of Democratic lawmakers on Wednesday that Mr. Trump had not been fully informed when promising voters a wall among the Mexican border last year and said that he had persuaded the president it was not necessary. He also expressed optimism that a bipartisan immigration deal could eventually be reached. I have one more paragraph to read, then I'm hoping you'll read his tweet this morning, Teresa.
Oh.
Okay.
No.
All right, or not.
Have it up.
John Kelly, the retired Marine general credited with bringing a measure of discipline. Did he really do that? I don't know that he did that. Has he done that?
No. Well,
to Mr. Trump's chaotic White House during his 6 months as chief of staff told members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus that he had educated the president about the issue of immigration, adding that Mr. Trump had, quote, ready, evolved on the wall. But President Trump directly contradicted the chief of staff on Thursday, saying his position on the building the wall had not evolved. He said in an early morning Twitter post, he said, the wall is the wall. It has never changed or evolved from the day I conceived of it. He added in a second tweet, the wall will be paid for directly or indirectly or through larger term reimbursement by Mexico, which has a ridiculous $71 billion trade surplus with the United States.
The key word in that tweet? Ridiculous. That tweet is ridiculous.
Well, I also don't know what indirectly paid for is.
I think what he's saying is they have a trade advantage. It was a threat, obviously, and we're going to take care of that trade advantage.
So meaning with the $76 billion, you'll minus the wall cost.
I'm sure that's
this
what
he meant. It's gibberish. We can analyze it. It's complete nonsense. It's been nonsense since he started saying it. Mexicans are not paying for the wall.
Okay, but Teresa, there's another way of looking at this, and that is it doesn't matter.
Right. What matters right now is the shutdown.
He just says it. He says it again, and he says it again.
I'm absolutely agreeing with you.
Yeah.
It's just
so we'll end up talking about this a lot tomorrow, but I will it's because it's news today. I'll mention it, but I want to keep on talking about the shutdown. But I do want to throw out this an NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll finds that by a 53-40% margin, Americans deemed President Trump's first year a failure, and by an almost 2-1 margin, 61-32%. Americans said they believe that Trump has divided the country since the election.
That's all good. On the other hand, greed will out. And we are seeing other polls from other places which are basically saying he's getting tremendous marks on his handling of the economy and other things, which is what I just said, greed. And one of his fake news awards was to Paul Krugman. For doing what? For saying, that the economy would never recover. Well, so he gives them one of his awards, his fake news awards. But as the Krugman people are saying, the people who support Krugman, it ain't over yet.
Right. It's maybe a little early to tell. CNN, I was looking up for CNN to see if they have the Dow listed. They don't, but they are telling us that it's 38 hours, 36 minutes, and 49 seconds to a possible shutdown.
Where would these cable channels be without their clocks?
I don't know.
You know, Joe, the Supreme Court. We are being told that Trump's lawyers are now saying that Trump is very anxious to talk to the special prosecutor. Very interesting indeed, because we know from aforementioned things that Trump is a liar. I mean, 2,000 lies in a simple year is a lot of lies. So do you go before under oath or not before the special prosecutor and lie again? And here comes the key question. Do you know you're lying? Right? Do you? Because there are liars and there are lying liars.
Well, he says he's eager to go before the special prosecutor.
That may be a lie.
It might be a lie. His administration has said how forthcoming his people are going to be when it comes to the congressional investigation. Then we hear that Steve Bannon was allegedly on the phone with the White House to find out about what they would let him say and not say, and that Corey Lewandowski was there yesterday
and
wouldn't say anything. So I'm not the first one to say this, obviously, but we are really now in a place in this country where we don't know what to believe or who to believe, and it's frightening.
Well, I have a pretty good idea who to believe.
You?
No.
Oh.
No, that's not worthy of you, Ira. I have a pretty good idea not to believe a president who's lied 2,000 times.
Here's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, there's many, many problems. There's problems globally when you don't know, you can't trust his word. But the problem now is you have these very important negotiations over whether or not to keep the government open, over whether or not to fund 9 million children's health care or the emergency relief for the fires and the hurricanes and such, and on and on and on. And it's extremely difficult for the House and Senate to negotiate because they can't trust the president's word. And it keeps changing.
Well,
and so that's the implication.
Why is Mitch McConnell saying we don't know what we want to do because we don't know what Trump wants to do yet? Why isn't Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, taking advantage of this vacuum in the White House and putting together a coalition and leading?
Pass the bill and send it to the president and make
who
him sign
it. Who says he'll
it.
Sign anything they
Here,
give us.
Here's why. Because there's a deal that they can cut in the House. There's a deal that they can cut in the Senate. It's not the same deal.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's their problem right now. And if you had a president who was engaged and you could trust his word, they would find a way to thread the needle. But what's the president doing today? He's going to Pennsylvania to campaign. He's going to Pennsylvania to campaign the day before a government shutdown when funding for the California fires and Texas and Florida and Puerto Rico is on the line, when DACA is on the line, when funding for health centers is on the line, when the FISA agreement, although they might have worked that out, and the overall budget's on the line and funding for the military. I mean, why don't they just cut a deal right now that says, we'll give you the military funding for the end of the year if you give us DACA, and then we'll deal it, give us DACA and kids health and health centers will give you military funding for the end of the year. We're done. And then let's negotiate the rest of the immigration stuff later.
You know, Teresa, when Trump's kids have talked about his negotiating techniques before he was president on the real estate stuff. And I remember one story, I think, from his daughter, who said that he had given her total control over one of the negotiations, and she negotiated, and they came to a conclusion. He walked in the room. He said, no, this stinks. I'm not doing it. So this is who this guy is. You can never trust his word. You can never say that if he says he's going to do something, that he's going to do it. He said to them, give me a bill, and I'll sign it. Then he said, I won't sign it.
But Wisconsin, the vote 2 days ago in Wisconsin has scared these Republicans. Even Scott Walker, Republican of Wisconsin, says this is a wake up.
Right.
A state Senate race in rural, western, deeply conservative Wisconsin, a Democrat won. And Paul Ryan was asked a question about that at his press avail yesterday on the budget shutdown and such, and he answered very quickly, and then they ended the press conference. They are upset about that, so that's their wake-up call.
On the other hand, the recent polls I've seen, and I know we got to get out of here for the break, but the recent polls I have seen show that the disapproval rate for some of the things that Trump does, like the economy and other things, is decreasing. So in other words, where they were way, way ahead on the Democratic margin, I heard today that only 6% extra would prefer Democrats.
Right, because they're taking advantage of wage increases in states where they oppose the increase in the minimum wage. The minimum wage was increased, and now they're taking it. They're saying, "Well, isn't it great that their wage increases?"
So what?
Right. I mean, they're messaging.
What's the result?
But some of us predicted that tax bill, as bad as it was, even for lower wage earners, that tax bill was going to help his numbers improve.
The difference between you and me, Ira, is that if I predicted it, I would say as I predicted.
Yeah, I know.
When you do it, you say, as some of us predicted.
There's a word to describe that, but I'm not sure the FCC would approve.
Oh, okay. Well, then maybe they know what they're saying.
All right. Let's.
You were right.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters as well. WAM, it's a panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Teresa Bourgeois, and your questions and comments. We'd love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Okay, here's an idea. Let's go to a couple of letters, and then we will talk about other stuff that's on our list, and we will move forward. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan?
Yes, Joe, thank you. Property taxes, says Alvin. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's from Gay. I'm so sorry. Good morning. Whatever happened to the circuit breaker idea? Our property taxes are one-third of our income, well above the $10,000 deduction limit. That will make our taxes increase. You got it, Gay. That's exactly what's going to happen right now. And the blue states are being held captive by a president who says, I don't like people who didn't perform for me. And so all the blue states are going to get what you're saying. So you say, what happened to the circuit breaker idea? I don't think he gives a damn. I don't think he's at all concerned about you or anybody else. He has made his decision. He's sticking with it. Am I being too cynical?
I don't think so.
No, I mean, clearly. I don't think that they were shy about it, that the tax bill favored the states that voted for Republicans.
Yes, but here is Gay saying, what about the circuit breaker idea, which is that if you make very little money, you shouldn't have to pay the same amount everybody else does. And of course, you know, the last people that this president is concerned about are the people at the bottom.
And the suggestion is the circuit breaker should have been part of the tax deal?
Yes.
Yeah, well, the massive tax deal that was the first one in 30 years that they accomplished in about, what, 10 days or less? And it's amazing. We're going to be seeing loopholes things that should have been in there for months, or if not years.
Well, that's going to be actually interesting. They're going to have a correction bill.
And to your point, Teresa, which you are always making and making well, we're hearing from CNN now that Trump is saying leave children's health care out of the stopgap. I don't want to see. And this gets right to this point. What do I care about kids who can't have any health care in the United States?
You know, the
oh, my goodness.
But just the timing.
That's beyond. I'm sorry.
No. So the children's health plan has been without funding for months now.
October 1st.
Meanwhile, and I'm not. This is nothing against DACA. I'm just saying the timing on DACA. They have a little more time. They have until March. Correct.
Well, that's the end date. But what the argument is, you need to do it now because there's this whole processing thing that has to happen. So if you wait too much, but yes,
I understand
legally,
that. But if we were to, if the time is ticking, it seems like it should be on child health care.
Time's up for child health. Time's up for the child health funding. Time's up. Kids are going to start losing their health insurance. Time's up for the neighborhood health center funding, the community health center funding.
And let's remember that this president is, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh no, I'm so shocked by what thank you for pointing that out about the president is saying no Child Health Plus in the
budget. In the deal. In the
deal. I totally interrupted you,
and
Alan.
That's his thing about which I was referring to before with Ivanka, you know, and the story about he pulls the rug out even from under her. He loves to make deals and to say, no, this deal isn't good enough. So everybody was saying the one thing that would make this acceptable to the Democrats is keeping the child health care in. Now, remember that there are a lot of middle class people who are involved in this. This is not just his traditional screwing of the poor. This is a middle class program where lots of people are taking care of their children. And I know many of them. So
you're saying that these are people who are not part of his base.
Well, that's unclear.
Oh, they're part of his base.
That's
too.
Unclear.
It's working class people who
there's a lot of working class people who voted for him.
So right. Let me just make sure I get this right.
I don't get what they unless.
But as far as the deal that we're talking about right now, they're having trouble coming up with a short term deal, right? I mean, they can't even come up with a short term deal
because you got Meadows and his caucus in the House.
Right.
Yeah. Meadows left last night with McHenry. And said, yeah, we're a long way away. This isn't going to work.
Because what has happened in the past is that the Republicans, even though they couldn't get the Freedom Caucus people, they knew that they could pick up some Democrats. And what the Democrats are saying is, you're in charge, you get the votes, or else you bring us to the table. You can't leave us out of the negotiations and then say, come vote for us. So Speaker Ryan had the audacity yesterday to have a press conference and talk about how the Republicans cared so deeply about these children and how dare the Democrats not provide health care for these 9 million children. Now, Speaker Ryan could have brought the Child Health Plus bill to the floor anytime since October 1st. You bring that to the floor, clean bill, up or down, that wins. It's a bipartisan program. It was put together by Republican Senator Orrin Hatch, Democratic Senator Ted Kennedy. It's forever until Trump had strong bipartisan support.
Okay, let's assume the bill passes up and down, which is not going to happen because, as you know, these guys are in the pocket of the president. But let's assume for a second what you say happens. What would be the result? In other words, would the president veto it?
I can't imagine a scenario in which the president vetoes a child. It's never going to happen, but if he were sent a clean Child Health Plus bill, why would he veto that?
Because he is who he is.
Because he hates health care.
Well, he'll try to have it both ways and say, I'm going to sign it reluctantly because I don't want to damage the country by shutting down the government.
And I only know from what I see in the headlines here. I don't know what he's up to. But if he's saying pull Child Health Plus out of the deal, he is purposefully trying to blow up the deal.
No, I think you may be right. But I think it's traditional Trump saying, okay, you probably are still pushing back on the DACA deal. I'm going to pull this out until you behave yourself.
If I don't get what I
yes.
if you want,
yes.
I'm not going to get what I want. Yeah. Other way around.
Okay. Here's another letter. Susan says, here's a question for the panel. Is it normal for the White House chief of staff to be meeting with opposite party caucus?
Yes.
And the answer is, from Teresa, the answer is yes. But we don't know how extensive. We do know that White House chiefs of staff have always negotiated with the other side. I don't know if it formally means walking into the caucus or the conference, but it certainly has been done that this guy is really not the vice president. He's really the assistant president of the United States.
Right. It's not at all unusual, particularly in times like this. When I was involved in the government shutdowns in the past in the 90s, I mean, you had the chief of staff up there in and out, back and forth between meetings and such. There's a, on the Hill, there's a, the vice president has a small, beautiful, by the way, if ever you're on Capitol Hill and you it's open to, you can see even the ceremonial room. It's gorgeous. But they have a, the vice president has an office on the Hill. And regularly in a time like this, that would be a buzz with the president's chief of staff, the president's legislative people, any of the key secretaries or experts on any of the issues. Absolutely. It's not an all unusual.
I just wonder what Kelly makes of all of this. You know, he's a military man, a general. He's highly decorated and highly regarded, at least before he came to work for Trump. And I would think that given the way the military works, there is a discussion about what we're going to do, and then they come to a decision, and then the general leads the way. And that's not what we're seeing in the every one for all for one, and every man for himself, as the Three Stooges would say, going on in the, between the both houses of Congress and the White House right now. Well, and they're sending Kelly to fix this mess.
But it seemed to me when I was reading that he was doing what chief of staffs do. He was going up and trying to calm and carve a path. You know, I keep saying thread the needle. And so the Democrats want DACA right now. The deal that the Republicans want to cut is let's do a few things now, and then 4 weeks, you know, over the next 4 weeks, we're close to a deal. Let's use those 4 weeks to negotiate a deal. Now, of course, if you step back and think about it on immigration, that conversation has been going on for what, Alan, 20 years?
Yeah, but you've got to put yourself in Trump's place to fully understand what's happening here, which is he doesn't give a damn. What he does is he says, in order to achieve the best possible deal on my terms, I'm going to keep throwing bombs into any deal that has been set up. That's who he is. So, and believe me, he will pull the rug out of anyone, including General Kelly.
Well, I think he's got the Freedom Caucus talking in one ear, and he's got the reasonable people talking in the other ear, and it's whoever talks to him last. And it clearly, even though Bannon's not in the White House, he's listening to the Freedom Caucus.
If Kelly knows how it's going to be, how the president's going to react to it, and he says it and he knows it's going to get out, is that just provoking him, or what is Kelly's motive in that?
Was it a misstep, or was he doing it intentionally?
It is not a misstep. You know, Franklin Roosevelt was famous for giving orders to a whole bunch of people who were around him, and there were different orders. And like who could run for president the next time when he had no intention of not running for president. I think to some degree that's what's going on here. You know, there's a whole bunch of people out there thinking they're doing what the president wants them to do. And even the president doesn't always know what he wants them to do until he decides where the next bomb is going to go. Anyway, next question. We did that one, I suppose. Good morning, panel. Always fun to listen, says Paul. Usually when the economy is cooking along, the sitting administration enjoys high approval ratings. Trump's are still in the basement, with some polling showing 60% of Americans think the country's on the wrong track. Your thoughts, please.
Well, Trump will say the reason that his ratings, if he acknowledges his lousy ratings, he will say one of the reasons is because the press is not giving him enough credit for the strong economy.
Well, he's riding on the back of Obama economy still.
Well, you could say that, although the rate of increase is even stronger.
It's phenomenal.
I think greed is willing out here, no question. Americans are saying that's good. So he's going to say, wait. Yeah, he's going to ignore the overall approval of his performance, and he's going to say, but the American people really approve of my handling of the economy. And they do.
And that's if I, you know, any politician would do that. Interesting event yesterday on Capitol Hill, which if, you know, anybody is wonky like me, I'd advise you to go listen to former Senator Dole, who had run for president. He was awarded the Congressional Gold Medal yesterday. And I listened to the speeches, and it was fascinating because I think, and President Trump was there, Vice President Pence, all of the leadership. It was in the rotunda of the Capitol. And it was interesting to me. It seemed like many, both the Republicans and Democrats, were trying to send a signal because they were talking about a day when you had somebody clearly... Bob Dole was partisan. Clearly, he held very strong views on policy. But he ran the Senate in a way that respected the rules of the Senate, respected the Constitution, respected the rule of law. and in their remarks, whether it was Senator Leahy or even some of the Republicans, I think that they were using that as a reminder. And I was there when he was leader of the Senate, and you know, it was fiercely partisan, but it was different than it is now. And what almost every speaker talked about is how important it was that he honored his word. And that you could make a deal with him because he honored his
something
word.
Something that this president doesn't do. Do we have to go away, Joe?
We do. We have to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back. Good morning. Welcome back to the show. Very nice to have you with us. Teresa Bourgeois here, Ira Fussfeld, and Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir.
Oh, I heard that hesitation. I know what
I was gonna. I was gonna say like the you know the ever hopeful, the ever happy, the ever
cheerful.
I
like
it when Ray calls you America's pal.
Yeah.
What's the Sesame Street Grouch character?
Oscar.
Oscar.
Oscar the Grouch.
Should we just call you Oscar?
No. All right. We have more letters.
Okay. Here they come. A dear panel, John Kelly has brought some discipline and order to the White House. I think back to the first 6 months when Rance Priebus was the chief of staff and Steve Bannon was co-chief. That White House was absolute chaos. The leaks and executive orders. Sean Spicer's run as press secretary. It seems much calmer now.
Is that true?
We don't know.
I don't know about that. I think that this president liked the chaos. I think that was part of his operating order. The way he did things. I don't think anybody would have gotten away with anything if he didn't want them out there. Every time Spicer made a fool of himself and was beaten up by the press corps, that took stuff off of the president's
But you've got to assume that the basic flow of paper and the administrative things that it's required of a president is probably functioning better. But again, it's the day before a shutdown. We don't
Well, if we believe if we believe Michael Wolff's book, he doesn't get into the office until 11 o'clock. He leaves the office in the relatively early in the afternoon. There's not a lot of chaos that he's creating while he's in the office that John Kelly can control. Most of the chaos is at 6 o'clock in the morning and then 7 when he's watching Fox and Friends and then at 9 when he's watching Hannity and then he starts tweeting.
But there is a lot of the regular business of a presidency that has to happen in an orderly way.
And between 11 and 4:30.
Even around the president.
Dear Roundtable, will it take 100% of children showing up at congressional offices to move the needle in order to shame them to do the right thing? And that's from Stephen. It would take a lot more than that, Stephen, and that hasn't been happening.
Well, I think today is a good day, if you're concerned at all about children, is to make some noise about this. Whether it's letters to the editor, or calling their members of Congress, calling your senators, it's well past time to get this done.
Bob writes, I don't think this came up yesterday morning. I don't think it did. Have any of the panelists seen the video of the CNN voter panel that was aired Tuesday night and yesterday morning, if I recall correctly, showing a half a dozen folks in Youngstown, Ohio, who voted for Trump and who unanimously thought he's doing a great job? If these folks are typical, there are a lot of folks in the middle America who seem delighted with what Trump is doing.
I have not as yet seen it, but I understand in today's New York Times they've devoted the entire editorial page to pro-Trump letters to the editor. So there are people out there. It's an interesting journalism question that they're doing that. But that aside, there are people who are still like this guy.
So if your 401k was going up meteorically, are there those people in this country who say, I don't care that he's picking on immigrants and I don't care, you know, that he's not giving health care to kids. I want mine and I'm getting mine.
I have to pay for my kids' health care. Why should they get theirs for free? And I don't want those immigrants here anyway because they're taking jobs from me and my kids. And
okay.
But I don't think that's just in the middle of the country.
But meanwhile,
I think that's all around the country.
Well, also, and we're also assuming that even those people, even among the president's base, have a 401k.
Right. Only half or fewer than half of the American people have money in the market. So, and the people who are making the most money out of this run-up are the people who also got the highest percentage tax brackets of people at the top.
To the point that we made about the tweets and all of that, I do want to get to the president tweeted this morning, CHIP should be part of a long-term solution, not a 30-day or short-term extension. That is opposite to what his administration said on Wednesday, saying from the Office of Management and Budget, the administration supports the bill's multi-year funding extension of the Child Health Insurance Program. If HJA Resolution 125 were presented to the president in its current form, his advisors would recommend that he sign the bill into law. Trump's tweet confounded even Trump's aides inside the West Wing through negotiations over how to fund the government into chaos as a Friday deadline looms.
You know, Trump keeps saying that the press doesn't want him to tweet because who knows why he doesn't want him to tweet. But the press is perfectly happy with him tweeting because it gives us a look inside this guy's mind in real time. But there is increasing evidence that a lot of his supporters still stick with him, but they will say, but boy, I wish he would stop that tweeting.
That's right. You know, 80% of Republicans, 80% think this guy walks on water. And they don't mind the tweeting, and they don't mind the sexism, and they don't mind his making out with a porn star and her descriptions of what he was doing at the time.
For a year.
What'd you say?
Reportedly for a year.
I mean, well, it boggles my mind that that story just got buried. I mean, I don't know whether it's true or not.
It wasn't buried.
Oh, Alan.
If that were Hillary Clinton.
I mean, that wasn't even on the front page of most newspapers.
If that was Hillary Clinton.
Or if it was Obama, can you imagine what Fox News would be doing with that every night?
Well, I don't think it was buried. And I think, frankly, the tabloids, which have an awful lot of readers, led with it day after day, have been leading with it day after day, getting quotes from her, getting quotes from her friends and all the rest of it.
But don't forget, the tabloids, as large as they are in New York, are essentially just New York newspapers. They have no impact in Austin, Texas or Portland, Oregon.
Well, it isn't only the tabloids, by the way. It's the major news gatherers, the cable people.
Even CNN haven't. You watch that they mention it, but it's not. I don't even know what kind of story it is.
I think it's because there's so much other chaos. Yeah. It's just the level of chaos, and people voted for him despite the tape. But
the question is, how many people admire it? That's the question.
It's also it speaks, I think, in part to how this country has evolved. I mean, he had an affair with a porn star, even while he's married, and his wife just gave birth. All right. That's just another day in this country.
Meanwhile, Gary Hart is just throwing bricks at the television set.
Got a picture of somebody on his lap.
To me, the real question, boring me, is where are people's members of Congress? Where's Congressman Faso? Where's Congresswoman Stefanik? We know Richie Neal, where he is. You know, where are these folks on whether or not to shut down the government or not, and what will be the impact if they can't figure this out? You have a Republican president, you have a Republican Senate, you have a Republican House of Representatives, and they can't figure a way to keep the government open.
You know
why
what?
Is that?
It's still going to be ho hum. Nobody believes it's going to happen anymore. This is something that we've gone through several times right now. Even as I said yesterday, even when we arrive at the point where the government is supposed to be shut down, it isn't shut down. So people don't really believe in it.
What do you mean it isn't shut down?
Well, they say, well, we don't have to shut everything down. The post office or the this or the that can keep on. The army can keep on going. So, a couple of people are given chits for their.
So what would be the impact? What will shut down? Is the TSA shut down?
I don't know what will shut down. I'm just saying to you that the reason that this isn't playing well right now is that people don't believe in it as a concept.
But it's very costly and dangerous to shut down the government. It costs a lot of money, and it's very disruptive. And it's also disruptive to run a government 4 weeks at a time.
Okay, so if you're Donald Trump, Teresa, what are you thinking right now in terms of government shutdown?
If I were the president, not Donald Trump?
No, if you were Donald Trump, the president.
I don't think he cares because he hates government and he thinks his constituents hate government. So what do they care if government
shuts down? He tweeted
several
weeks ago the country needs a good shutdown.
Yeah, and he said that during the campaign. I don't think he has a respect for federal workers. I don't think he understands what the government does. I don't think he understands the implications of a government shutdown. But I think Kelly does.
But the government, if it does shut down, it would. The deadline is Friday. What, midnight?
Midnight Friday.
And so Saturday and Sunday would be the first 2 days of the shutdown. So it's largely no impact. And that would that not give
no
the,
mail?
Right. Would that, would that largely
couldn't
give
go to the state parks?
Both parties national, then will put their fingers parks to the wind and hear who's being blamed.
Una más. Interested in comment about Trump campaigning in PA today. Almost always very interested in what Teresa has to say about current matters. Earlier this morning, she indicated her concern that Trump was going to Pennsylvania today to campaign instead of dealing with critical matters in D.C. But in capital letters, isn't it through these campaign, quote, events that Trump does, in capital letters, deal with these critical matters to an admiring audience? What does the panel think Trump will do at today's campaign, quote, stop? Won't he purposely interject even more uncertainty into deal-making with Congress and the public?
I think certainly when you're trying to move a policy agenda, it's not at all unusual for the president and his cabinet to fan out all of the country and try to build support for that. This is not a policy event. This is a campaign event. It's the day before a government shutdown. To me, the optics of campaigning, doing a campaign rally the day before a government shutdown, is not good. And the likelihood, these are delicate negotiations, the likelihood of adding, you know, more chaos like what appears to be happening today, it just is not presidential. I know it's presidential for this guy. I know, you know, people say, well, this is, he is who he is, and that's why people love him. But and some Republicans worry that him going into that district is going to hurt the candidate.
Could right now.
Well, it's also very early. I mean, it's a month and a half away.
They're so terrified of losing the seat. I think this is post Wisconsin jitters.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is the 18th of January. With us, we have Dr. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Teresa Bourgeois. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear from you. And just a quick reminder, we have our live broadcast tomorrow from 9 to 11. We will be broadcasting live. That will be on the radio, so the panel will go from 9 to 11 tomorrow. We'll be talking about the first year of the Trump administration, so stay tuned for that tomorrow. If you'd like to join us in the audience, there's still a handful of tickets left, and we'd love to have you join us. All you have to do is go online, WAMC.org, give us a call, 1-800-323-9262, and it's $100 a ticket. So there you go.
And we want to meet you.
We would love to meet you. Doors open at 8:15, and then the show begins at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, well, Joe, I'm going to tell you right now, first of all, it's going to be sold out. Of that, there is no question. As you say, a handful, and you're not kidding. I'm even nervous about saying that. Usually I say stop when you're within five
or six.
Depends
on whose hands, because if it's Donald Trump's hand, it'd be less tickets than if it was somebody else's hand.
I see.
Yeah.
Then also, I'll admit that,
Rob is giving you a heads up. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll admit that I am worried. we have $500,000 we have to make before February 5th. And right now, things have slowed down a little bit. There's still some money coming in. But it's nothing like that original rush, which raised that $1 million that we basically have. Now, this is, Alan, I've always tried to tell you the truth about this stuff. Right now, we need some extra help. And if you're out there and you can do something extra, it would be great. We need you. We want you. WAMC.org. And just say, when you write in at WAMC.org, just say, Alan sent me.
Alan sent me.
And we need you. We want you. Isn't that an Elvis Presley lyric? I'm not sure who sang that.
I loved Elvis.
All right, let's move on to some other stuff here and talk about other items. You have letters, Alan. Let's go to the letters first. Thank you very much.
Anthony says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Good morning, Anthony.
We all wanted the wealthy to be taxed more. I don't think all of us. And they were. It just turned out to be the wealthier states, not the one percenters. That's how I see it, from Anthony. Thank you, Anthony. Thanks for your views. Julie says, dear panel, I see New York Times and my GOP representative, Elise Stefanik, betting on normalizing Trump or continuing to normalize Trump. It's what the GOP wants. By the way, the misinformation on the president's height is still a huge issue for me. I take the truth very seriously and listen to the White House doc lie. I felt like we here in America were no different than North Korea. It's scary. I will never normalize Trump. And that's from Julie in Saratoga Springs. But what I didn't understand about this letter is maybe somebody could help me with it. Dear panel, I see NYT, I assume. That's
it may be referenced to today's editorial page where they're giving a lot of space to pro-Trump letters.
Oh, yeah. I see. Normalizing.
Now, have you talked about the president's health exam? Did that come up at all yesterday?
We briefly mentioned it. We did not get into great detail.
You know, on the surface, you
In fact,
you
we look, had listeners pleading with us not to.
Oh, all right, then let's forget it.
No, nothing profound.
I was going to say this is a doctor who's been examined several white presidents of both parties.
He knows how to maintain his presence.
Yes, and so one would presume that the numbers are the numbers, and it's very objective. And his conclusion was this guy is real healthy, but as a layman, and I emphasize I'm a layman, but I'm a layman who's had a lot of blood tests done in the last several years. Some of the numbers jumped out at me as, wait a minute, now he may not be keeling over tomorrow, but they're numbers of concern. And that's what the guy on CNN, Dr. Gupta, said. He's got borderline heart issues. He doesn't do any exercise. He has a lousy diet. And what really got me was I don't believe the doctor's role should have been anything else other than read the numbers and give an objective reply to the questions. Where is he coming off saying his health is so good, I think he'll finish this term and he would even be good for another term?
I wonder how much of that got dictated by the White House.
That was my point.
And I know it was. All right, I get that. And I just want to emphasize it. But I also want you to know that the good reporters went out and found some of the top cardiac experts in the world, in the country certainly, and they said, "No, this is very bad. This is a bad guy's health."
Well, and then there's the so-called Gerther movement,
which
is so that he is claims to be 6'3". And yet, people that he stands next to who are 6'3", he is much shorter than. 6'3" is a good height because it makes him not obese in the sense of those numbers, but is it an accurate height? So there's a lot of people who look and say, okay, well, and so if you have a person who's 6'3", who weighs 230, they've showed many pictures of many pro athletes who are 6'3", weigh 230, and they look a lot different.
Well, I'm 6'3". No, I'm 5'5", and going down.
But even his weight is, I mean, it should be an objective judgment that we should all believe, but does he look like he's 239?
What's your point?
My point is I think that the numbers were fudged.
Well, why is that important?
Healthcare I'm concerned about is that 3.2 million people in this country fewer have health insurance than they did when he became president. That 9 million kids.
Yes,
well, I get that.
I agree with you that there are bigger fish to fry and there are other things to worry about. However, I do think it is also a story, and it is concerning that if of all things, the president's health and the president of the United States has an exam that you assume that information, as we always have, assume that information is accurate.
Hey.
When you look at that information, it does not appear to be accurate.
I agree. It's bizarre. It's bizarre. It's bizarre that they would go along with it. It makes no sense. They showed pictures of people who are 6'3", 239, and they looked nothing like him.
But. Hey, Woodrow Wilson had a stroke. And Mrs. Wilson would walk out of the room every day and say, this is what the president wants you to do. So Mrs. Wilson was really the president of the United States, let's face it. The American people have a right to know what kind of shape this guy is in.
Right.
And when a political analysis comes from this rear admiral who's a doctor, who says to the nation, he's good enough not only to finish out his term here, but to do another term also, that's disgusting.
Well, and the other thing was that the cognitive test, which as I understand it, is very highly regarded in the medical community. But as I also understand it, this is a test that's mainly designed to detect the oncoming of dementia. So if he doesn't have dementia, fine. People have suggested he might. That test would debunk that, but it doesn't necessarily mean, at least in my mind, that the guy is still not unstable or have mental issues.
Okay, and we heard from, let's see, did I read this one from Julie? Yes, I did. Thank you very much, Julie. Talk about dementia.
Yes.
Okay, so...
You just have so much on your mind.
Yeah, I do. It's not all good. Mike says, the I don't care people. Alan, I travel a lot in my job, and I run into a lot of people who work for corporations. I agree. I believe there's a lot more silent people out there that do not respond to the polls that are happily ready to vote for Trump again, despite what I feel is his vile behavior. I am scared. Mike in Saratoga Springs. And James said, healthcare. Medicare pays most of the cost for Cheney's new heart. Apparently, Republicans don't have a heart for children. And then Richard says, the worst thing happened. First, Access Hollywood tape. So what's the big deal about the porn star? And where is news about this other woman's lawsuits? Teflon Trump. Tracy says, broken record. President Trump is doing what he was elected to. Tax reform. ISIS is just about gone. Illegal immigration is down. Jobs are coming back. Like it or not, every day other contrived crisis is dredged up. None have stuck yet. If the Dems are going to take the Congress in the next election, why not relax?
Ira?
I was reading the letters.
I don't know. I'm stuck on the word contrived. I mean, I think the crises that come out are seem to be self-inflicted. I don't know.
I agree with you, Joe. I mean, the whole point of that letter is it's the Democrats who are coming up with these ideas. They're not. This is it. May be gorilla dust, as you always say, but in fact, Teresa. But in fact, it is stuff that comes from him, not from other people.
But that is, several people I know who are, you know, ardent, adamant Trump supporters. This is a common theme. Why is everybody so mean to him? Why is the press picking on him? It's you've never had anything like this before with people picking on him so much. But I mean, it's just responding to his actions. He's not presidential. Listen to what Senator Flake said yesterday. Read Senator McCain's piece about the First Amendment freedoms. Listen to what these senators, Republican senators, said at the Bob Dole tribute yesterday. This is not presidential. It's not normal.
So when... Jeff Flake, let's talk about that for a moment. Comparing Trump to Stalin, our democracy will not last.
Well, I've been saying that all along, Joe. This is the road to fascism. This is the road to totalitarianism. When you pick on the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, look, I don't believe everything I read in newspapers. I just don't, because each newspaper has a different take on what's going on. There's a big difference between the New York Times and the New York Post, for example. There's a big difference between the New York Post and the New York Daily News, both of whom have a lot of readers and others. But nevertheless, if you say that the people in charge are allowed to make those decisions as to what the press will do and not do, it is the way in which dictatorships all over the world have behaved in the past on the way down.
You can't disagree with that. I wonder what Flake's motivation was. I mean, I as a retired journalist, I appreciate the words and don't disagree with the words. Not quite sure what, as the outgoing senator from Arizona, what his intentions are. I am a little cynical about whether he may have a future that he sees in presidential politics and, you know, wants this on his clip reel. But
what's wrong with that, though?
Yeah. I mean,
I happen to agree with what he said, so there's nothing wrong with it. I think the best thing that he pointed out, as others have pointed out, is that, yes, newspapers make mistakes, or the media makes mistakes, but almost always the mistakes will be self-corrected, whereas when politicians make mistakes, they don't correct them. And his point is, how can these politicians, and you know who he was talking about, suggest that the press is somehow lower than they are, when at least when they make their mistakes, they own up to them.
But I think, you know, it's important that we've been saying, where is the Republican leadership, that this behavior should not be normalized? And here is a case where somebody steps up. Is there any political motivation? Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. But certainly John McCain doesn't have any long-term political motivation, right? He's extremely ill.
And he wrote an op-ed
And he wrote
in the
an
Washington
op-ed
Post.
About the fundamental importance of the importance of the First Amendment to the fundamentals of our democracy. And, you know, I think that it's important that these folks are speaking up. You know, we need more. It's important, you know, obviously we need more Congressman Bob Michaels. You know, we need more Silvio Contes. We need more, you know, Republicans who you can, or Bob Dole, you can agree with them, disagree with them on the philosophy, but they adhere to the rule of law, basic tenets of our Constitution, fundamental freedoms of the press.
You were talking about being cynical of the motivations, but and perhaps this is naive, maybe even Pollyannish, but don't you think another motive is there must be some frustration on his part that his Republican colleagues aren't saying anything?
Yeah. No, I listen, I should probably take the glasses half full instead of half empty. It's clearly an important statement. It's unfortunate that that needed to be said, but it was said. You know, so I don't want to put the guy down. It was certainly unusual for any number of reasons.
And some of the criticism of the flake, not criticism, but the reaction to it did say that putting this all at the hands of the president and not also of the GOP is something to be noted.
And Trump's reaction was not on Twitter, but his reaction was the fake news awards.
Right.
And just think about that.
Yeah, this is spending his time on that.
We're in a budgetary crisis. We have people in Puerto Rico and California who have been devastated by disasters, and in Texas and in Florida. You know, the litany, you know, the health, whether it's health care or the DACA kids or the overall budget. You have at the Interior Department, the National Parks, the Advisory Board, all nine people quit. In the last few days, officially yesterday. I guess they announced it 2 days ago. There's all sorts of issues going on. There's, you know, what's going on all around the globe, and that's how he chooses to spend his time.
Alan? No? Okay.
Well, no. I mean, I think what has to be said is said, and we are, and, you know, we are sitting here scratching our heads and saying, you know, as I do every day, how did we get here? How did this happen? How could all of those things that Teresa is cataloging for us have confronted us with a country where so many people just don't care?
Well, can we get it back on track?
Well, let's put it this way, Teresa. You're terrific. You have made this point again and again and again about those things that are part of what we are confronted with that have to do with the economic, social, and mental health of the country. And yet, we are consumed with the nonsense that is going on. And I think it's relevant that we cover the nonsense to the degree that we do, because we have a guy who some people are saying is basically quite out of his head,
right,
in terms of his dismissal of what's good for people and the kinds of things that you've been talking about. It's awful.
Meanwhile, Simon Edelman is a photographer for the Department of Energy. He attended meetings. He took pictures of Secretary Rick Perry. He snapped pictures for official purposes. He is now out of a job. Why? Well, he took a photo of Rick Perry hugging a coal executive. Late last year, he shared with journalists photos that he shot at a private meeting between Mr. Perry and the campaign contributor Robert Murray, the head of one of the country's largest coal mining companies, Murray Energy. One photo showed the two men embracing. Another captured the cover sheet of a confidential action plan that Mr. Murray brought to the meeting last March, calling for policy and regulatory changes friendly to the coal industry. Democrats and some environmental groups seized on the photo as evidence of the energy industry's direct line to Mr. Perry, who had been in the job less than a month when the meeting occurred. Mr. Edelman, who has not previously disclosed the identity as the source of the photograph, said in an interview that he wanted to expose the close relationship between the two men based on the action plan and conversations that he overheard.
Is this the same guy who sues
everybody? I was thinking
everybody?
The same thing.
Yeah. He's the coal executive who sues everybody. He famously recently sued John Oliver, who basically dared him to sue him, and he did. So we have to watch what we say.
Well, but I thought he was the guy who owned, when I said yes, wasn't he the fellow who owned all those coal mines where there was real trouble?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And this is the guy who is a sewer, as they say.
I want that to be the last word of this segment,
frankly. S-E-W-E-R.
Yes.
Right.
However you wish to spell it.
And he gets Spilkes.
We are out of time. My thanks to Alan and Ira and Teresa. Reminder, we are going to be over at the Linda tomorrow, 9 to 11, live right here in WAMC. If you want to be in the audience, tickets still available. WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. We'll be back right after this.